This is Robin Farmer for this edition of The Writer's Voice for Virginia Voice. I'm delighted to have award-winning author and journalist Kristen Green here to talk about her New York Times best-selling debut book, Something Must Be Done About Prince Edward County. Kristen has worked for 2 decades as a journalist at newspapers, including the San Diego Union-Tribune and the Boston Globe. She has a Bachelor of Arts from the University of Mary Washington, which is using the book as its campus read during the 2016-17 school year. She also has a Master's in Public Administration from Harvard University School. Her book was also longlisted for the Andrew Carnegie Medal for Excellence in Nonfiction. The Washington Post recognized it among notable nonfiction for 2015. Kristen, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Robin.
It's a pleasure to have you discuss this amazing book, which is a personal look at what happened in your hometown, which defied the Supreme Court's Brown versus Board of Education ruling. When ordered by a federal court to desegregate the public schools in 1959, white leaders instead chose to close them. Something Must Be Done About Prince Edward County has many wonderful reviews like this one. The story of integrating American public schools has gotten drowned out by the much louder, dramatic, and violent history of the civil rights movement. But no struggle is as heartrending as one involving children. Return with Kristen Green to her hometown in Virginia to find out how people she loved and admired could have supported such an injustice. You'll be wiser if you do. That's one of many, many, many wonderful reviews. And I particularly like that because I thought it really touched on an aspect of the emotional hook of this story. So, Kristen, tell us why you decided to write it.
Well, I had been a journalist for a decade or so when I moved to San Diego to work as a reporter. And I started thinking about what had happened in my hometown because I was spending every day writing the stories of other people and other communities. And I realized that I didn't know this really amazing story about my own town where I had grown up. I mean, if you asked me about it at that time, I couldn't have told you in 2 or 3 sentences the basic story of what had happened in Farmville and Prince Edward County, Virginia. And a story ran in the Washington Post, in the magazine, that for the first time really explained to me the bigger picture about what had happened there, kind of where it fit in the whole civil rights fight for education. And I started thinking about just wanting to know more about the story, being able to understand the big picture of what had happened in Prince Edward. But also, I thought it would make a great book, and I couldn't find much out there that had been written that really told the big picture of where Prince Edward fit in the bigger scope of civil rights. And so I just set out to learn more about what had happened. And then as a journalist who is particularly interested in narrative journalism, I thought, you know, this would make such a great story because you have all these children who were denied an education, who are still alive, and many of them still living in Prince Edward County. And maybe this is something I should pursue. And that was just an idea, you know, that entered my mind many years ago. And that was the little seed of the idea that eventually became this book.
And how long did it take?
I like to say that I did my very first interview in 2006, and the book came out in 2015. So it took a good 8 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was doing other stuff in the meantime, of course, working as a journalist. I went to graduate school at the Harvard Kennedy School. During that time, I had 2 children. I moved to Virginia from Boston and worked again as a reporter here in Richmond, Virginia for a couple of years. So a lot of other stuff was happening in the meantime, but it did take quite a bit of time and it morphed, you know, it changed a lot while I was working on it.
How difficult was it to write a book filled as it was with family secrets? How did those closest to you receive it?
I didn't start out thinking that I was going to be a huge part of the book. I mean, I really wanted most to tell the stories of how Black families and Black children were affected by the school closures. But I did think that I brought a really unique perspective because I grew up in Prince Edward County in Farmville, and I attended the Segregation Academy, Prince Edward Academy, that was founded in 1959 when white county leaders chose to close the schools rather than desegregate. And both of my parents had also attended Prince Edward Academy, and they were children when the schools closed. And so I knew that I had connections to the white story that would enable me to tell it in a way that any other reporter or author who tried to tell the story wouldn't have the same access. So I did think about, you know, being able to tell that part of the story. But what was really driving me was telling the story of what had happened to Black children and families. But as I went down the road kind of working on the book, I realized that the fact that I had married a multiracial man and now have multiracial children played a role in this story. And it was really what was driving me to be able to tell the full, complete story of what happened in Prince Edward County. It was because I wanted to be able to share that story with my children, because I knew that my hometown would play a key role in their lives, would be important to them. But I wanted to make sure that they understood the story in a way that I never had. And as I discovered things about my family that I hadn't known, and the role that my grandfather played in the school closures, which really no one else in my family was aware of, I struggled with what to do with that information, and I knew that that really needed to be part of the story. I realized that the struggle to kind of find a way to understand that and come to terms with that, to deal with that, was also part of the story. So my journey to know what happened in my hometown became one of the narrative threads of the book. Reaction to the book, you know, has been mixed. I mean, I think my parents really had a lot of time to kind of to deal with what the book was going to be about, and to kind of absorb my words, because they were, you know, they got to see a version of the book once I had a manuscript, you know, so they had probably about a year to kind of to think about it. And some of my extended family, you know, didn't get to do that. And I think for them, it was a little bit harder to absorb the information. I mean, I think that we're all in different places about what to do with this information about my grandfather's role. And what I learned when I was working on the book, I had always known as a child growing up that he was really involved in the white segregation academy, Prince Edward Academy. He had been on the board, and I knew that. And that was really normalized in my town, because many of the white businessmen, many of my friends' parents were really involved in running the school too. It was such a small school that, you know, it was a all hands on deck kind of thing. But what I didn't know was that my grandfather had joined a group that was based in Southside, Virginia, called the Defenders of State Sovereignty and Individual Liberties. And he had been a founding member and an officer of the Farmville branch of that group. And that group called for closing the schools if worse came to worse, if Prince Edward was forced to desegregate their schools. Put that out there as an option. Within a few months of Brown being handed down in 1954. So for me, that bit of information was really a turning point in my reporting and sort of the narrative of the book, because I hadn't realized, and my family hadn't realized, the role that he played. And so at that point, I realized that really I couldn't just blame my town and my county for this act of racism, but that my family was also at fault. In 1954 was when this group was formed and my grandfather was involved. And the schools didn't actually close in Prince Edward County till 1959. So there was a long period of time there where people had the opportunity to change their minds, to back away from this threat, you know, to come up with other ideas, to even think about maybe how desegregation could work. The fact that they held on to this idea for 5 years and made sure that they were ready to close the schools and open a private academy just changed for me the whole story. That 5-year period was something I wasn't really aware of as a child. When I heard the stories as a child, what I heard was that, well, the government came in and told us to desegregate our schools, and we weren't ready to do that, so we opened up a white academy. That was kind of, you know, the boiled down version that was in my mind when I started reporting this book. And to learn that there was a long period of time there when county supervisors went from funding the schools for a full year to doing a month-to-month funding so that they could be ready to close the schools at a moment's notice, all of those details really changed how I felt about the school closures. And that was something that I had to deal with in the book, as well as my grandfather's role.
You have two daughters, two young daughters. How do you explain this to them? Do they understand what Mommy's book's about?
They have been talking about civil rights in school since they were itty bitty. I mean, I think since preschool we started, they would come home talking about Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King. Since they have been growing up, there have been really great civil rights movies that have come out. My youngest daughter is named Selma, and the movie Selma came out, and I didn't think that she could see that movie because it was a little violent for such a young child. But I was able to, you know, show her some of the trailers and tell her and her older sister about it. So much has come out with Obama's election and presidency. There's been so much talk in the news about civil rights. And so they're able to kind of hear a boiled down version of what happened in Prince Edward County and see how it fits with Martin Luther King's work, with Rosa Parks' decision to stay on the bus and not move seats and be arrested. It's kind of fitting in well with their education. And we talk about, you know, the reasons that they're in public schools and that public schools are for all the people. And what would that have been like if you had been children at the time? And my daughters, who are multiracial and brown, are confused and wonder, they wanted to know, would they have been sent to the white schools or would they have gone to the black schools? And I think, you know, it's pretty likely you would have been lumped into the black schools. And so you would have been denied an education. So I think that kind of stuff really hits home for them. It's been a really enjoyable process to see them, you know, as they grow up, ask more questions about the book. And, you know, someday they'll be old enough to read it and know all the details. But I'm really proud that I've created this work for them that helps them to understand their family better and to understand my hometown better and to sort of understand that there is a lot of gray. You know, I mean, one of the hardest things for me was trying to come to terms with the fact that my grandfather had done this thing. He had supported closing the schools that I considered a racist act. Part of the journey for me was realizing that, like, he could be a wonderful grandfather and a generous man and a church-going deacon. But he could also be a person who made this decision, who believed that, you know, that whites were superior and who didn't want his children going to school with black children. He could be both of those things, and that he was complicated and we are all complicated, you know. Kind of embracing the gray areas of life.
The fact that people can be great and flawed, right?
Yes, exactly.
So what's the reaction been from your hometown? And has it varied according to the black community or the white community? Or is it the same reaction?
Well, I think that's interesting because a lot of people say, what's the black community response and what's the white community response? I don't know that it's like divided up that way per se. I mean, I do believe that a lot of the black students who were denied an education, specifically those who agreed to talk to me for the book or who wanted to share their stories, are really energized by the book. I think the book has been really good for the Robert Roosa Moton Museum, which is the civil rights museum in Farmville that tells the story of the school closures and also of the events that led to the school closures. I mean, Prince Edward County was one of five communities in the Brown versus Board of Education decision. And that stemmed from a young woman, Barbara Johns, a student at Moton High School, deciding to walk out in 1951 to protest the conditions of her school. And the lawsuit that resulted from that, when the NAACP agreed to take these Prince Edward children's case if they would fight for desegregation rather than equal facilities, became one of five cases in Brown v. Board of Education. So I think this has brought more visitors to Moton. You know, a lot of people that come to Moton now tell museum staff that that's why they're there, because they read about the book or heard about the book. I do think there are people in Prince Edward County who are shut out of school who question why a white woman's book has been successful and wish that perhaps a black person or even a black student shut out of school could have been the person to tell the story. And I understand that. the white response has really varied. I mean, I've faced the most resistance from people that I feel like know me pretty well, that I grew up with, you know, older generations who felt that this story had been told. And why are we, you know, digging this up again? Who would rather see the story pushed under the rug so that Prince Edward County can move forward, according to them? On the other hand, you know, there are some very progressive people in Prince Edward County. There's two colleges there, Longwood University and Hampton Sydney College, which have both invited me to speak and have really embraced the book. And there are a lot of people who grew up in Prince Edward County and or have lived there for years and didn't know the story and have been extremely grateful that I told what I call the full story, you know, the fullest to my ability story of what happened in Prince Edward County. So I think the reaction, you know, has really been mixed, and not everyone tells me what their reaction is, so it's hard to gauge sometimes.
Has unearthing this story in any way affected your views of racism, equality, and justice? And how, if at all, has it changed you?
It has affected my views on all of that and made me want to be more of a participant. I mean, for so many years, I've been a newspaper reporter, just reporting on sometimes on what I'm assigned and sometimes, you know, what I find interesting. I've always... Or not always, but for the last, you know, decade or more, 15 years, I've been really interested in writing about race. And so that's one of the things that I followed in writing about people living in poverty. People that newspapers don't do a great job writing about immigrants. So that was already an area of interest. But now I think this is like writing the book. After the book came out, people had a lot of questions for me about what to do about certain things. And they wanted to hear more from me. In my point of view, and I think that's in part because I wrote it from a first-person perspective, I feel like the book has kind of thrust me into a lowercase a activist, you know, which is a new position for me, having, you know, consciously worked for two decades to not have an opinion or not express my opinion anyway. So that's really a new role, but I think it feels good. It feels like it's what I'm supposed to do. It feels like the right thing to do. And so I think it will really shape, you know, the work that I do in the future.
How has this book influenced your own feelings about public education and the education of your children?
Well, I came to the conclusion while working on the book that Prince Edward County public schools suffer because of the existence of what was formerly known as Prince Edward Academy and is now Fuqua School. You know, my mom and I have argued at length about this, about that the community has a right to have a private school and to have their children educated there. I don't disagree with that. I mean, that school is now integrated, you know, somewhat diverse now. But I think that because so many white families still send their children there, that support that white businesses, white-owned businesses and white families could have lent to the public schools instead goes to the private school. And so I think that is one, you know, reason that the public schools have suffered for so long. And I see the same thing where I live in Richmond, Virginia, you know, that a lot of white families have traditionally sent their kids to private schools. And so, you know, their support could really be used by the Richmond public schools, which struggle and which are really segregated. But instead, you know, that support goes to the private schools. So I enrolled my kids in public school here in Richmond from the time they were in preschool. And I think it's been really great for them. You know, they happen to be in a preschool and an elementary school that are pretty diverse. And that's, you know, that's something that I really want for them. My husband and I would like to keep them in public school. I think every parent has to make that decision for themselves as their kids' needs change as they age. But I'm really dedicated to the elementary school they attend. I'm really involved. I'm really dedicated to the Richmond public schools and to sharing this message that I think that white families sending their children to public school is something that we all need to think about doing. And that's the only way that education is going to improve for all children. studies show that Black and brown children do better in school and in life attending diverse schools, and that being in diverse schools does not harm the white children. I think there are many benefits that maybe we haven't talked about enough for white children to be in diverse schools too. This is kind of my message locally, and I'm doing all I can to support the Richmond Public Schools.
There have been 3 movies in recent months that deal with the history of Virginia, struggles with race: Hidden Figures, Loving, and Nate Parker's movie, Birth of a Nation. And reading your book, I just thought, oh my God, this could be a movie. Any interest in adapting this to television or the big screen?
I had some interest from a couple different companies when the book first came out. I have nothing to report right now, but I would love to see it be a movie, of course, you know, but I don't know. I hadn't thought personally about writing a screenplay, but maybe that's something I should consider, Robin.
It is. What advice do you have for aspiring nonfiction writers, and how can the local writing community help them?
Well, I just finished a 2-year term on the James River Writers Board, and that's a great place for Richmond area and Virginia writers to go to learn more about whatever part of the craft that they need help in. You know, I always say that they helped me from the very beginning when I was starting to look for an agent, trying to put together a proposal for this book. And then after I found an agent, you know, improving my proposal so that it could go out to editors at houses. And then, you know, once I had landed an editor, you know, how to get the book done in that, you know, allotted time period. And then once the book was done, how to promote it. So really getting involved with James River Writers is key for all steps of the process. Now, my advice is to know that there are great stories right here in our backyard. I mean, I've seen 2 of the 3 movies you mentioned, and it just reminds me that there are so many hidden histories here that are just waiting to be uncovered, you know, waiting to be told. I think part of what's so great about telling these stories is that it changes the narrative moving forward. And that's really what my commitment is. And, you know, in the next few years is to pursue some of Virginia's hidden histories and other American hidden histories, and to keep up this conversation about race. And I'm interested in writing about multiracial issues. I mean, my kids and my husband are multiracial, and I think so many people were drawn to this story to learn more about them and are interested in them. And it's just made me realize that Virginia and the United States have a growing population of multiracial people that's, you know, that is just going to keep growing, and after my kids are, you know, married and have kids. And so that's something I'm interested in too, but I'm going down a lot of different paths right now, you know, working to tell some of Virginia's stories and America's stories that I feel like are just waiting to be told.
Kristen, of all the awards that you've received, what's touched your heart the most?
I was just blown away to receive the Library of Virginia Literary Award for nonfiction. It's just something I never could have anticipated, and it just meant so much to me to receive that with Governor McAuliffe and former Secretary of Education Ann Holton sitting in the audience. And I was also really honored to receive their People's Choice Award for nonfiction, because I just felt that both of those said that I had told a Virginia story that was really important and needed to be told. And I just appreciated so much that, you know, anybody took the time to read them and thought they were worthy of an award. So I think those are probably my favorite too.
Kristen, thank you so much for stopping by and speaking with us.
Thank you so much, Robin. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for sharing your writings and your wisdom with Virginia Voice.